For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
As part of our new credentialing body for teachers, we will promote positive education about the nuclear family, the roles of mothers and fathers, and celebrating rather than erasing the things that make men and women different and unique. I will ask Congress to pass a bill establishing that the only genders recognized by the United States government are male and female, and they are assigned at birth.
There, you tell you what, Donald Trump, the gift that keeps on giving. Well, that deserved a gong, huh?
Maybe we want some Taco Bell now. Running to the border.
Jeff and Joe are both gone, so Katie's pressing all her buttons.
Doing whatever I want.
Whatever she wants. She's unadulterated. Just let me at it. Let me at the machine. Welcome back to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show. It's 5:06 in the p.m. here at 101.9, 94.1 News Talk STL. If you'd like to weigh in on Joe Biden's balloon gate, his latest scandal, because we can't figure out why we haven't shot this thing down, you can give us a call. Chris just did an entire Chris's Corner on that. If you missed it and you just got in the car because you got off work at 5 o'clock, you can catch our podcast anytime. You can listen to us in our entirety anytime you want at your leisure. Simply jump on our website, newstalkstl.com, Katie, or subscribe to podcasts wherever you find podcasts, right?
Anywhere that you find podcasts, any app that you already have on your phone, you should be able to get anything from us, Newstalk STL, Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show, all the way until the morning show, Mike Ferguson in the morning.
We've got Dr. Aaron Hedlund coming up at 5:25. We'll break down the gangbusters jobs numbers from today. Surprising jobs numbers. But if you'd like to give us a call during this segment, I will do the stump speech at one point, but we can talk to you before or after that. Or in our final segment today at 314-912-1019. That's 314-912-1019. Chris, before we get to that, there was a rather scary moment at the Pebble Beach Pro-Am today. This would have terrified me. A caddy during the Pro-Am collapsed on the 11th hole and had to receive CPR. Like the worst place to have a problem because you're on a golf course, you're in the middle of the holes, you know.
Please don't tell me he was young and athletic and fit and had a COVID shot.
Yeah, I don't know. There's very little information on this. This was breaking news just a little bit ago. So hopefully everybody's okay. Not what you want to see at the Pebble Beach Pro-Am for sure.
Don't want that to be the story.
Beautiful Pebble Beach. Is this our main man, Gene, on the line? All right, let's go to Gene here on a Friday. Gene, it's always great to hear from you on Friday. You're on the program. Go right ahead.
Thank you much for taking the call. Happy Friday, everybody.
Happy Friday.
On Chris, unfortunately, I didn't hear Chris's corner. I was busy with an automotive transaction. Anyway.
Picked up a new car, Gene?
No, tires.
Oh, I thought you picked up a new Mercedes or something.
Yeah, really. But anyway, yeah, that's them not taking that balloon out is just further showing of weak, no backbone. Shoot, that's like having someone decide to walk through your house and you see them and it's like, oh, well, they're okay. They're just kind of scoping things out to come back sometime later. We'll just put milk and cookies out for them and everything's fine.
Gene, my theory on Chris's Corner on the reason why they didn't shoot it down is the government may be fearful is that balloon may have a new COVID-19 virus strain attached to it or a biological weapon, and that's maybe why they don't want to shoot it down because it may disperse it all over the United States. What's your thoughts on that?
Oh, the biological weapon's an interesting thought, and that's true. I wouldn't put too much past them, but if that were the case, we could wrap up Dr. Fauci and airdrop him in the place to clean it up with a vacuum cleaner.
With no mask.
That's right.
Excellent. Thank you, Gene.
That's right.
Always great to hear from you.
Thanks, Gene. Have a good weekend. Great weekend.
You too, thanks.
Thank you, Gene. Gene was in a wind tunnel there. Let's get to Rick. Rick standing by patiently. Rick. Oh, darn it. Rick had a great comment about Joe Biden and the balloon.
Mm-hmm.
You know what it was? I'm curious. You got me curious now.
Well, he basically, I mean, if he wants to call back, Rick, you're
Rick, call back.
Let's wait it out. He just has a comment
after the corner.
Yes, after the stump speech.
Stump speech.
He was tying Biden to the Chinese and the balloon and all this, making some connectivity points there. Rick, you're happy to ring us back. Anybody else as well? 314-912-1019. So an old friend of mine who I haven't seen in a long time, I guess that's how I got on his mailing list, started publishing the Liberty Thought of the Week. A fellow by the name of Paul Hamby, who I believe is from the far northern lands of northwest Missouri, and a real libertarian-leaning kind of a thinker. And he puts out these little Liberty Thoughts of the Week every Monday. And I saved this one because I thought I would go through parts of it. It's got some history in it. It's got some current consideration and content, especially for those of us who work in and around the legislature, which honestly is really all of us. We're all voters. And with the legislature completing its first month here in Missouri and in Washington, D.C., I thought I would share some of the Liberty Thought of the Week by Paul Hamby with all of you today.
Listen to me. I'm very consistent. I'm a very stable genius.
You want answers.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
So that's another reason we need communism.
It's time for the Speaker's Stump Speech, sponsored by Hanson's Tree Service at hansonstree.com.
You know, some of this is kind of reflective as well. Regarding Keira Davis's new book that we discussed with her and at 4:05 today. If you missed that, you can always go back and check out the podcast. And it's how, you know, we've kind of woken up here 3 years post-pandemic, and a lot of us, when we sit down and think about it, are shocked at how much of our freedom and liberties that we gave up or were so willing to give up, and how easily we were so willing to give them up. And it wasn't because it was really thrown upon us all at once. It was kind of a slow drip, drip, drip. There's a PSA that runs on our station, and you may hear it sometimes if you're listening really early in the morning or late at night, sometimes when the PSA runs, and it's a veterans commercial, and it's about the frog in the boiling pot of water. And the point is, it's from an old fable. If you boil a pot of water and you throw a frog into the boiling pot of water, the frog's going to immediately jump out. Because it's going to have the immediate reaction of, holy Toledo, that's hot, I don't belong in here, and I'm going to escape. And usually the frog will. But the old adage goes, the old wives' tale goes, that if you put a frog in a nice, just lukewarm pot of water and then slowly bring it to boil, the frog will not realize what's happening to it because they are, you know, reptilian, they're amphibians, and their skin structure and their cardiovascular system works differently than ours, and they don't notice when that is happening. They just think they're getting warm and cozy, but what they're really doing is freaking cooking alive. And before they can realize what's going on, it's too late. We almost had that same experience here in our country, didn't we? We slowly were more than happy, many of us, to receive the slow drip, drip, drip of an ever-growing, ever-increasing government that told us everything that was being done to us was, quote, for our own good, quote, for our own health and safety and security. Many of us began to realize, though, thankfully, we hadn't lost our eyesight, our sound of hearing, or our ability to think. We realized that for some parts of our population, doing all these things under COVID-19, which, you know, folks, what could go wrong with putting a mask on? Or what could go wrong with just staying home? At home, you're safe, right? When you're locked down, you're secure, right? The government will send you 3 squares a day and enough COVID relief cash that you'll all be fine. Well, the government wasn't paying attention to the fact, or if it was paying attention to this fact, it was ignoring it. There were some harms that were occurring out of these safety and security measures themselves. And a lot of those blew to a boil once the kettle was cooked. Look at the Summer of Love. Many believe that a lot of the Yes, there were some flashpoints that summer with the George Floyd incident, but many believe that the top blew off of the kettle because people had been locked down for so long and that emotions exploded. There was no other outlet for them. What about the fact, putting the George Floyd incident aside, what about the unrelated incidences of the skyrocketing suicide rates, of the amount of overdoses that reached historic epic levels that we still haven't recovered from? What about the fact that when the ACT test scores came out, that we realized that children were in a place where they hadn't been in 30 years in our country? We had lost so much in the pandemic because of the, quote, safety and security measures. Government never operates well when it mandates the same thing for everyone, regardless of the thoughts of individual freedom and liberty. And, you know, maybe we should have done like what Sweden and some of the Nordic countries did. Protect the aged, the infirm, the disabled, the seniors, but let the able-bodied, healthy people, who, to my knowledge, have largely, by the statistics, recovered from COVID and lived to tell the tale, thank you very much. You got that heavy hand of government, and it's not the proper role of government. Well, Paul Hamby wrote about that this week, not necessarily about directly regarding COVID, but just the proper role of government itself. And he told the story about Davy Crockett. Of course, everybody knows the name Davy Crockett. Born in Eastern Tennessee in 1786, he was a frontiersman during his teenage years. He was a skilled woodsman, a scout, and a hunter. In 1813, Crockett joined the militia, the U.S. militia, as a scout. He went to Spanish Florida, helped Andrew Jackson clear British forces from the region. He was a frontiersman, a soldier. He was a three-term congressman. While he was in Congress, there was this famous story about a proposal of a congressional appropriation to benefit the widow of a naval officer. Well, that seems like maybe something the government could do, whether or not it was necessarily within its scope and powers and authority. It seems like an empathetic thing to do. It was a very unpopular thing to be in opposition to this, but Davy Crockett did rise in opposition to this appropriation with a speech that became famous titled, "Not Yours to Give." Crockett said, "I have as much respect for the memory of the deceased and as much sympathy for the sufferings of the living, if suffering there be, as any man in this house. But we must not permit our respect for the dead or our sympathy for a part of the living to lead us into an act of injustice to the balance of the living. I will not go into an argument to prove that Congress has no power to appropriate this money as an act of charity. Every member upon this floor knows it. We have the right as individuals to give away as much of our own money as we please in charity, but as members of Congress, we have no right to appropriate a dollar of the public's money. We cannot, without the grossest corruption, appropriate this money as the payment of a debt. We have not the semblance of authority to appropriate it as a charity. Mr. Speaker, I have said we have the right to give as much money of our own as we please. I am the poorest man in Congress on this floor, but I cannot vote for this bill. I will give 1 week's pay to the object, and if every member of Congress will do the same, it will amount to more than even the bill asks." What Davy Crockett was pointing out was that the government can do a lot of things. It can do a lot of things that it may seem very charitable, but is that the scope of government? Is that the purpose of government? As Mr. Hamby points out when he editorializes about Davy Crockett's situation, he says, you know, your role in government is not to give things away just because it feels good. The proper scope of government is to protect our rights, our liberty, and our property of all the citizens that elected officials represent. That is spelled out in the U.S. Constitution quite clearly, and it's reimposed in Article 1, Section 2 of the Missouri Constitution itself with the phrase that to give security to these things is the principal office of government. And when it fails to confer the security, it fails in its chief design. Look, if we lived in a land where money grew on trees and we could just endlessly give away everything that everyone has and it would always be replenished, that would be one thing. But that's not reality. And that's not the proper purpose and scope of government. And that's the Speaker Stump Speech for today, February the 3rd, 2023.
Yeah. Where do you find, I'm sorry, where did you find that? Where, what, that little...
I'll forward it to you.
That's cool.
I like that. It's a little couple paragraphs I get from this fellow Paul Hamby every week.
Yeah. So. Yeah, he's disappeared. I've been Facebook friends with him for years.
He had disappeared.
I hadn't heard his voice for a while or heard his name for a long time. You said something.
I have no idea. I suddenly started getting these emails from him. Like, he popped up like 3 weeks ago, Chris, out of the clear blue.
Yeah.
I must have been in his phone or something, and he must have built a distribution list. And I'll forward this to you two guys. Okay. You guys can subscribe to this, too. He welcomes subscribers. So
there we go.
It's a little short little thing he puts out on Monday mornings, and it's about 4 or 5 paragraphs long.
Cool.
And it's pretty cool. You know, it's and I think it goes to the point that, you know, government's not our mommy or daddy, you know. And if it becomes such, well, then it's going to start taking a lot of your freedoms and liberties away. There, it's supposed to protect those.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So, all right. Well, that's the Stump Speech for today. As promised, Chris, Katie, we've got Dr. Aaron Hedlund joining us next. Chris, I know you got a lot of questions.
I do.
For the good doctor about the jobs report and whether it means all that we think it does on its surface or whether there's more that we need to unpack. Dr. Aaron Hedlund's a great guy to do that with. We'll speak to him next on the Tim Jones and Chris Harp Show at 101.9 News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
On the screen. Because it was already there when I got here, man. Remember what the economy was like when I got here? Jobs were hemorrhaging. Inflation was rising. We weren't manufacturing a damn thing here. We were in real economic difficulty. That's why I don't.
He sounds like he just went like 4 or 5 rounds in the boxing ring with somebody, doesn't he? Yeah. He just sounds out of it.
I feel like he sounds so tired. Yeah. Like,
I'm not going to take it. And inflation wasn't out of control when he came into office. It came in out of control after he
shut everything down.
Spent all that money.
Yep. Yeah.
But his money program, yep. That's just a bald-faced lie.
I think if you go back and look at the charts, Chris is spot on. Inflation was like 1.6%. And then the Inflation Reduction Act got passed. And then here comes inflation.
You know? Example of the sorry media. No one even pressed him or challenged him.
Right. Where's the follow-up? Hey, Mr. President, you know, we got a guy who can challenge him on that. Let's bring him in next. He's Dr. Aaron Hedlund of the Show Me Institute. Dr. Hedlund, Katie wanted to know if you were digging the glass animals, if we should make that as part of an intro for you, like a theme, you know?
Oh, yeah, let's go for it.
Perfect.
You got to brand yourself in this world.
Yes, you do.
You know who they are, right, Dr. Hedlund?
This band.
Well, let's just say I've heard their stuff.
Okay, all right.
Okay, very good, very good. Katie was wondering if you were hip enough. And I said, heck yeah, he is. We know he is.
Well, I'm getting Katie in trouble. Of economists.
Very good. Dr. Aaron Hedlund is with the Show Me Institute, of course, and we're so happy for his expertise on Friday because Friday seems to be when some of the biggest economic and financial news comes out. Dr. Hedlund, the jobs report came out, and everybody was expecting it not to be as rosy, at least as far as some of the jobs numbers. So tell us, Dr. Hedlund, it's something the White House can crow about, but does it tell the whole story about where we're economically headed on a macro level?
It was certainly an interesting number. And let me say first, I'm really glad you guys corrected the record, because it sounded like the president went 5 or 6 rounds with reality and lost the battle.
Right.
Inflation was below 2% when he came in, and then it didn't skyrocket until the big spending happened. Mm-hmm. But as far as the jobs report goes, it's really hard to interpret because the number was huge. I mean, I think everyone was shocked by this over 500,000 gain in jobs. But what makes it a little bit complicated is at the beginning of each year, there's a big statistical adjustment process that happens, which is not shady. It's nothing shady. It always happens. They're adjusting populations and whatever. So it makes things a little tricky to interpret. And there's a little thing, there's also seasonal adjustments that they do. I'm not going to get into all the details, but there's some statistical reasons to make us think that whether this is the true number going forward or not, we'll see. And if you dig deeper into the numbers, if we really had that hot of a jobs market, you would expect to see labor force participation tick up, which it did not. You'd expect to see wage growth be really high, which it was not. So something seems a little bit of an anomaly, and we'll see what happens in the next month as far as the revisions go.
You know, my theory, Dr. Hedlund, do you think maybe because we've had a change in leadership in the House, Republicans coming in, a slightly more hopefully conservative government, that people said, hey, the gravy train of free money is going to be ending with Republicans in power, and hey, I better go look and find a job now?
I think that's already been a gradual process as that money has dried up. And it's unfortunately taken longer than expected because so much government money went out the door. To me, I think the biggest effect of the political change will be better investor confidence. Right? Investors now know, and by that I mean businesses. Like businesses now know there aren't going to be any new tax hikes anytime soon. So that's going to give them greater confidence. And consumers hopefully can think the same thing. But that being said, we saw consumer spending actually decline a little bit in December. So there's a lot of mixed data out there right now.
Mm-hmm. We are speaking to Dr. Aaron Hedlund of the Show Me Institute at Aaron_Hedlund on Twitter, showmeinstitute.org. Aaron, there was another announcement by the Fed this week. Jerome Powell gave a lengthy statement, as he often does, when the Fed's going to take some action. They raised interest rates again. They took a small step forward, but they're still raising rates. So, Dr. Hedlund, could you explain to us, you know, what did you take away from what, you know, you usually have to read between the lines, right, with a lot of what the Fed chairmen say. So what did you take away in the totality from Jerome Powell's statements, and where do you think we're headed with inflation?
Yeah, so the good news is I do think inflation numbers are going to come down quite a bit over the next several months. I wouldn't be surprised if by the summertime we're looking at inflation that's more in the 4% range or even slightly below. Now, that's not victory, right? And victory is getting back to 2%. But that's the biggest thing we have to guard against is, you know, premature declarations of victory, which is really what Wall Street's wanting. I mean, they're wanting the Fed to come out and say, oh, it's all good. We're all done. We're going to start cutting rates.
Mm.
And I think Powell's number one job has been to convince Wall Street that's not the case. Like, they're not going to cut rates at all this year, period. I mean, even if a recession starts to happen, rates aren't going to be cut. I think Powell's trying to be as clear as he can be. But I think Wall Street doesn't want to buy it. I do think rates will keep going up more incrementally than they have been and unlikely to go down at least until 2024.
And Dr. Hedlund, that was my question. You know, the Fed has been raising interest rates 75 basis points for the last few months. This last raise was only 0.25% because, you know, the economy is slowing down. But with this job report of 500,000 jobs, will that put pressure on the Fed to start raising interest rates a little higher again?
My sense is they're going to have the same question mark that I and others have had about, you know, how much is this 500,000 jobs a true representation of what's going on in the market? Like, is this really the data, or is it some of this just the adjustments that are normally made? So they're going to watch probably the next couple months to see what goes on. But I think it really makes it even that much clearer. They're definitely not cutting rates. My guess is they're going to keep going at a 25 basis point, at a 0.25% increment for a little while until something pushes them one way over the other.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, Dr. Hedlund, before anybody declares victory on anything, whether it's Wall Street or the White House, based on what you said earlier about all the adjustments that happened at the beginning of the year, which are, you know, appropriately to be done, we need to wait and see what happens with some of the other factors in that GDP report from a few weeks ago that you also referenced, right, about how consumer spending may be really ratcheting down now that all across the country, a lot of the subsidies and the COVID cash are finally running out, combined with the fact that a lot of major companies have announced job layoffs. And I don't know, maybe those haven't all occurred yet, but some of the largest companies in our country, especially in the tech sector, are announcing all these job layoffs. So while everything looked rosy this month, We need to wait a few more months or even quarters before we know exactly where the economy is heading, don't we?
Yeah, we definitely need more time to see what things are going on. I mean, some of these tech jobs are very kind of high publicity sorts of things, whereas there are many more people in other jobs that aren't as affected. So I don't think there's evidence yet of employment declines. But yeah, in terms of the GDP numbers, this is why it's always important to look under the hood, and it's not always easy to do, but that's why I enjoy coming on here to talk about it. Mm-hmm. When you look at some of those numbers, you know, investment seemed positive, but it was actually just inventories. Businesses aren't actually doing, like, installing new factory and equipment and things like that. So, and consumer spending actually declined in December. So there's a lot of uncertainty. I don't think it's a guaranteed recession. I don't think we're guaranteed in the clear. It's sort of like that turbulent flight, and we'll just have to see.
Dr. Hedlund, there is this belief that if the United States never or didn't raise the debt ceiling and we quote-unquote technically defaulted on our obligations, that the world markets would be in free fall and we'd be on the verge of a of a world depression. But I don't understand that mentality when they also know that if there was a political solution the next day and they passed, they could pass an agreement that would pay all of these debts immediately. I don't understand why there's that such a panic when people know that the United States eventually, after the political impasse is over, is going to pay its debts.
Yeah, the challenge, it's tough to know, although we saw what happened with Liz Truss over in England when they weren't even defaulting on anything. Just the announcement of tax cuts that weren't fully paid for, offset with spending cuts, it led to a big market disruption. So I wouldn't be surprised that if we really did breach the debt ceiling, that you saw some big negative reaction in the market. So I'm all for not going there. But I think the key is the left is using that to say, therefore, we need to raise it without anything else attached to it. And this is nonsense because, first of all, we are on a fiscally unsustainable path. Let's acknowledge the reality. So we can't just keep doing the same things we're doing over and over again and hoping that somehow the economy is going to be fine. It's not going to be. Secondly, historically, many of the times that we've raised the debt ceiling has been accompanied by some kind of spending reforms. This is a common sense approach. The refusal to negotiate in any way whatsoever approach coming out of the administration, that is the unreasonable approach.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Hedlund, you made a reference there to, you know, unsustainability of what we're doing. And I want to ask you about the what. Isn't a lot of the what that we're doing, it was put into motion on steroids by the unified government of the Democrats, House, Senate, and White House. They were able to do whatever they wanted for 2 years. And what they did was they supercharged the economy with a massive amount of spending. And doesn't that have to do with this theory of modern, I think they call it modern monetary policy or modern economic theory, where if you are the world's superpower, where everybody relies on your credit, they're relying on your dollar, that you can therefore spend as much money as you want into oblivion. It never matters. The chickens will never come home to roost. And that we never have to worry about repercussions. Is that basically what we're talking about here? And why do you think that theory eventually will fall and fail?
Yeah, it's basically a whack job doctrine called modern monetary theory.
That sounds very academic.
I love it.
Yeah, that's a formal term. And one of the biggest proponents of it was actually a former faculty member at University of Missouri, Kansas City.
Oh.
Who went on to become a top advisor to Bernie Sanders.
That says it all.
But it basically says that the government doesn't have budget constraints, and it can't ever default because it can always just print money.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the problem is then you generate inflation, and we've been seeing that over the past couple of years. So I think that's what causes that theory to lose influence, as we now see the inflation. And I'll also say on the academic side, they refuse to actually provide the equations for their theory anyway. So there's not even a rigorous way to poke the holes in it, because it's just this amorphous, you know, kind of bottle of rhetoric. But the other thing I'll say in terms of the left's framing of things is they like to use this analogy like, oh, well, we already encountered the spending. Now we're just having to pay our bills. Well, that's not true. This is sort of like you show up to the restaurant. You're the person with the credit card. Someone else there has already ordered tons of food. Some of the food hasn't even started been cooking in the kitchen yet. It would make total sense to say, okay, the stuff that the kitchen hasn't even started cooking yet, put a pause on that.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the spending that hasn't actually gone out the door, I think, yeah, that should be on the negotiation table. We need to move towards a much more sustainable path.
Dr. Hedlund, I know one of your areas of expertise, I think, with your fellowship at the Federal Reserve, is real estate issues. And I know in November the numbers were down once again. What's your crystal ball say about the housing market in 2023 and beyond?
So I think it's going to be definitely weaker than it had been for the past couple of years. But mortgage rates are starting to moderate some. I do think inflation is going in a good direction. And because we do have a split government, we're not going to get any more humongous spending bills. So I think that things will trend in a better direction. I think it'll be less painful than it was in 2022. But I wouldn't be surprised if there are some price declines this year.
Hmm. We're speaking to Dr. Aaron Hedlund of the Show Me Institute, showmeinstitute.org. Dr. Hedlund, I want to circle back to where we started your segment, and that was with that quote from Joe Biden in response to a reporter's question, declaring that he had no responsibility whatsoever for the inflation. And like you mentioned, you know, he sounded like he had gone a couple rounds with the truth, because he said that he was dealt a bad deck of cards, and that inflation was already existing, and he's helped repair it. They're also now taking credit, Dr. Hedlund, for the inflation coming down. So isn't this a situation really where Joe Biden, number one, has created a different reality in his own mind than what existed when he took office in January of 2021? And secondly, taking credit for the crisis eventually abating that you created is something that I guess you require people to have really short-term memories for, right?
Yeah, I mean, I give them credit for being experts in gaslighting. I mean, they pass infrastructure bills that aren't about infrastructure. They pass Inflation Reduction Act bills that actually increase inflation. And then they just spin the numbers entirely. I mean, the reality was, in January of 2021, inflation was below 2%.
Yes.
And the economy was in the middle of a V-shaped recovery. And then they passed a $2 trillion spending bill that Democratic economist Larry Summers, former Obama, former Clinton Treasury Secretary and former Obama, head, econ policy guy, said was the most irresponsible macroeconomic policy in 40 years. And then you saw the highest inflation in 40 years. So this is not something the economy had. This is something that was because of overspending and disincentivizing energy and disincentivizing work.
Dr. Hedlund, our current debt is at $34.1 trillion. Mm. And I'm curious, you can't run a business, you can't run a country without having some type of debt. But I'm curious, what would be a number that you think would be a reasonable and sustainable debt for the United States?
Yeah, I don't know if there's like a Goldilocks porridge kind of percentage. Mm-hmm. I mean, really what I look at is, I mean, first of all, I don't think it should be over 100% of GDP.
Right.
So, the size of the economy should not be smaller than the amount of debt we have. And to me, I'm really concerned about the unsustainable. If you look at the imbalance between tax revenues and entitlement spending in the future, it's going to grow and grow and grow, and no one wants to talk about it. And the reality is, if nothing is done, there are going to be automatic big cuts that people are going to face immediately. Those are very painful. So I'm talking about Social Security recipients getting 25% cuts, not in the future, but like existing retirees. So we need, I'm not talking about doing cuts to Social Security, but what I'm talking about is we need spending reforms pronto, and to get GDP bigger than debt again.
Mm. Dr. Aaron Hedlund, our guest this afternoon, where we unpacked all the financial and economic news of the day. Dr. Hedlund, thanks for joining Chris and I, as always.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely, indeedy. ShowMeInstitute.org. Well, does everybody feel smarter?
I'm just so worried that he's offended that I think that he might not want glass animals as his.
He had no idea.
He's still stuck on that.
He had idea who the group was. Like, yeah, I've heard the music.
Yeah.
He's like, yep, sounds pretty hip.
That sounds pretty good.
Keep it. We should get him a.
We need to get him a theme. Maybe now it's got to be like a hip hop theme,
or maybe.
No.
Maybe
yeah,
some
I can't
quotes.
See the economics professor with the hip hop.
Maybe some quotes from Weird Science or something.
Oh, that's
or
a good
Back
one.
To the Future.
Oh, both are good.
Yeah,
yeah. I need to make one for
him.
We could
do some fancy stuff for him there. Well, there we have it. Dr. Aaron Hedlund, at Aaron_Hedlund on Twitter. When we come back, we will have one final segment of the show and of the week before we hand you over to the Larry Connors USA Daily Report. Can you guys believe, like, we're in February now. Like,
incredible.
Next week's going to be, like, almost middle of the month. Wild indeed.
Crazy.
Thanks for being along for the ride. Oh, I know what I was going to say. I was filibustering myself because I was like, I'm supposed to say something. Next Monday, this Monday, folks, Chris and I will have a big announcement about a big News Talk STL Nation event for all of you all to join us at in the near future. So there's a big tease, right? We can't tell you about it today, but we will tell you about it on Monday. All right, when we come back, we'll make sure we didn't miss anything that we needed to have you know before we sign off for the week. So keep it right here and give us a call if you want to comment on anything we've been discussing today. 314-912-1019. The Tim Jones and Chris Harb Show rolls on here at 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Counsel for Hunter Biden has written the National Security Division of the Justice Department. I know you like to keep that agency very arm's length, but is it arm's length when the president's son writes DOJ seeking an investigation?
I mean, look, I'm going to be pretty consistent, as I have been from this podium when it relates to that that particular question that you're asking me. We have been for the last 2 years, and I will say to you that that is something for Hunter Biden's personal representative, their representative, to speak to. I'm just not going to speak to it from here.
Huh. About them apples.
I'm going to make a prediction on KGP's tenure at the White House. I think they are easing her out. We've seen the last couple of press conferences where this Ian Sams guy is doing the press conferences out in the White House driveway while she's saying, hey, talk to Ian. He's out there. They can't get rid of her because she's the first black, Hispanic, lesbian press secretary that I hope I got all those in there.
Trisexual.
Trisexual. So I is that a such thing?
No, I
but
made
if
it up.
If
might as well be.
If Joe Biden truly does run for president and he survives this scandal that's going on, she's gonna go to the campaign.
Uh-huh.
And be a spokesman on the campaign, and they're gonna bring somebody else in to be the White House secretary. And that way they can get rid of her. But here's a job, you're working on the campaign, and people can play it off, and she won't look like she was fired.
It's a good call.
But, yeah, I mean, they're easing her out.
Yeah, they just give her
especially
something.
Especially with a new chief of staff.
Give her something else to do.
She's so bad.
She's so bad.
She's so, there. I mean, anyone with eyes and ears, I don't care how Democratic you are, I don't care if you are a bleeding heart liberal, you cannot sit there and say that Karine Jean-Pierre is great at her job.
She's terrible at her job.
When the liberal networks start getting frustrated with her, which they obviously are, then you know that your time is about to come.
Oh, and I'm glad you say that. Keep talking, guys.
Yeah,
I actually have something. Washington Post did a not-so-flattering story on her, saying that she's, you know, when you lose the when you're a Democrat, when you're a spokesman in a Democratic administration and you lose the Washington Post, you're pretty bad.
Mm-hmm. If you lose the Times, the Post, any of those newspapers. Our buddy Tommy Pigott had a funny tweet today about the... We're like looking for all the funny tweets about the balloons.
Yes.
Tommy Pigott says, so, we've gone from the adults are back in charge to, well, there's just nothing we can do about a Chinese spy balloon.
Yeah.
You know?
Seriously.
Yeah. Yeah. Remember what was that? What they say, Katie, on inauguration day? The adults are back in charge. We're going to be. Is this being respected around the world when the Communist Chinese Party thinks it can just send information collecting spy balloons?
I mean, they just
showed the path of this thing. It started in mainland China, went up through Alaska, down through Canada, through the Western United States, and is now, I think, rolling through St. Louis about now as we speak.
And I can't believe that this thing just got off course. It's almost like it's being guided, because it's gone all the way across the United States, and it just so happens to go across military silo sites like in Montana, and then went over a military base in Kansas. It's going over Missouri, Whitman Air Force Base. Mm-hmm. Is that just a coincidence?
Yeah, you really got to wonder. there was something else that I saw. Oh. So, you know, this jobs report was fantastic if you need a job, right? But if you look at any of the other economic news, there's all these economic headlines on the Bongino report today, and they link you to actual publication. So listen, so we got big jobs report, right? Yay, hurrah. Here's some other headlines. Food prices are so high, even Whole Foods is concerned. Bed Bath and Beyond, which is one of the biggest consumer staples, you know, is that me? Is my computer making noise?
I
is that me?
So. Someone's making noise.
I'm making noise. Okay, I shut it off.
They're about to go out of business, so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you got that. U.S. Shut up. What is
quiet
going on?
You.
Quiet you. That's
quiet
me.
You.
It was me. U.S. productivity sees worst plunge since 1974. Apple sees 5% sales drop, largest since 2016. Record number of Americans tapped their 401ks last year to cover expenses. And so on and so forth. So, yes, the jobs number yay, it was fantastic. But I know that some people are working 2, 3, and 4 jobs to make ends meet, and it's because everything else is so expensive. So I don't think, I think you can say, hey, it's great that everybody has the opportunity to be employed.
Absolutely.
But no, the economy itself on a macro level is not fantastic, as Dr. Hedlund just told us for about 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm. I'm also wondering, what is the statistic, and I don't know what this is actually called, but what is the percentage or statistic or numbers surrounding the people that stay at their jobs right now? Because, you know, like, there's a lot of people doing the daily, we hear a lot of people, our friend Gene that just called in earlier today, a lot of people now are hiring, as you said before, Chris, like the day worker, like you like can get the, paid today.
Like the the day to day.
The day to day.
Yeah, the day to day.
So how many people are getting the job and sustaining it and keeping it rather than having the job for the day and then
and
boogie?
And do they count that?
Yeah.
Is that, every day, is that a new job? That's a great question.
That's interesting too. Like, what's the success rate of sustainability?
Yeah. Chris, did you find what you were on?
I didn't, but it was a quote that I had from a Washington Post article. They were saying that she basically was not very good at her job. It was like, op-ed.
Well, to Christian Daytalk, you know, every single week, and he's in the press briefings, he's part of the press pool for the Washington Examiner, and he says all of the time how frustrated the entire pool is. I mean, no one can get answers, and if you can't get answers, then you can't do your job.
Yeah, and, you know, we said that before. The press is pretty much on the Democrat side. They lean left, but one thing they will not stand for is you lying to them or misleading them, because then they look like fools, and it exposes them as the shills that they are for the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. And you see that now, the hard questioning that she is getting, and the hard question Biden and the administration is getting on this scandal.
Mm-hmm. Man, I wonder what they're going to cover on the Sunday shows this week. Think about where we started this week and where we ended up. You know, we were still talking about documents debacles and things like that, and then we had the Hunter Biden laptop issues, and now we've ended up the week with this balloon drifting aimlessly, maybe not so much, across the United States of America's U.S. Air Force bases.
How do we still not question that China is the biggest enemy of the United States when we just found out what happened with the pandemic and their part to play in creating the pandemic? And then now we have a Spygate balloon that's traveling around the world taking pictures. I mean, how in the world are we still having a debate at how dangerous China actually is?
I think we are having a debate on, is China an enemy or are they a friend? But I think the point that we are so connected to them economically, our supply chain is connected to them. We saw the big example. One of our guests said yesterday, or Mr. Matthew Yee,
Miles Yu.
Miles Yu, he mentioned that yesterday in his interview, that during COVID-19, 90%+ of our PPE materials came from China. We were dependent on them. Our antibiotics are made in China. A lot of that stuff. So, you know, you have to be careful of how you tick someone off when they basically hold your destiny in their hands when it comes to that type of material, your supply chain stuff. So we're stuck, in a sense.
And, Katie, you have a arguably compromised commander-in-chief. Joe Biden can't be tough on communist China because of all of the swirling allegations around him and his son for all their business deals. What a chutzpah. We played that clip coming in. I mean, is he cracked up again? Because he's sicking his lawyers on the people that disseminated his abandoned laptop. So, I mean, talk about, so that happens in third world dictatorships, right? The children of the dictators get to sick the state police on the people that they don't like.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, really, it's a desperate strategy, Tim, because they really don't have anything else. I mean, this laptop is very damaging. We've been talking about it the last 2 years. So they have made the decision that the only real route they have is to just be aggressive and try to sue these people, saying they got this material illegally. You'll see a lot of questions on these people's character who are making the accusations. That's all they got, is to throw mud. Unfortunately for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a bad, we all
think, and I know, you know, it's a bad strategy.
It is.
But to them, it's all they have.
It's a Hail Mary. You're
right.
They
just can't sit there and just take attack after attack after attack. We got to fight back.
Right.
And that's how we do it, but it really makes your situation kind of worse.
It's it's exactly like Baghdad Bob as the buildings are burning behind him in Iraq. Well, we got about a minute left. Little fun little tidbit I heard this morning. I'm not a big NBA fan. I know Katie isn't. Go sports.
Go sports.
And Chris, I don't know. You're not a big NBA
fan. I don't watch NBA anymore.
So I did hear an interesting stat this morning. LeBron James is about to break Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's all-time scoring record of 38,000 points scored.
Oh, my gosh.
And he's going to do it in the next few games. The ticket prices on like StubHub and stuff, people are trying to guess which game he might break it at, are going for anywhere between $90,000 and $200,000.
What?
Yes.
$200,000 to see the game?
Like all the Hollywood elites who live in L.A., Katie, they're the ones buying the tickets.
Oh, my gosh.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, LeBron, I just have no respect for him. He's a great player, but...
Great player.
I just thought...
He's no Michael Jordan.
The ticket price thing.
It's
astronomical. Oh, what's that? Didn't they... A famous documentary came out during the pandemic about Michael Jordan that everybody says we should watch.
Yes.
Because it reminds you what an incredible player he was. Yeah.
He was on another level.
Yeah. All right, we got to get out of here. Right after us, the Larry Connors USA Daily Report, followed by Pocket Watching with JT. Lots more straight ahead. We'll see you Monday at 3:30 out of the gates on the Tim Jones and Chris Harp Show, 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.